The Egyptians' concept of time, they had two words for time. One is called nehne. N-E-H-N-E-H. No, actually, that's not right. Nehe. N-E-H-E-H. N-E-H-E-H. Nehe. And that means constant repetition or repeated movements. The other word is jet, D-J-E-T, which means timeless stability. So to take them together, the idea is that time is both in constant movement and entirely still. So in this sort of Egyptian traditions, time is something that they work with. And one of the meanings of the spiral serpent Mehen is that she is the serpent of time. Now, right at the heart of Egyptian tradition, of all their rituals, all their experiences, is the idea of returning to something they call Zep-Tepi, Z-E-P-T-E-P-I, Zep-Tepi, the first time, the beginning. It's the same idea as you find in Genesis, where Genesis says, in the beginning, Bereshit, in the beginning, or the Gospel of John, in the beginning is the word. In arche ente logos. So the idea of returning to the beginning. And in a sense, the jet time is the pathway into the beginning. Nehe are the patterns of our lives, the movement of our lives. If you like, the spiraling of the serpent.
Can you just say those two things again?
Nehe, N-E-H-E-H, Nehe, is the spiraling movement of time. Spiraling patterns of our being, but also the spiraling movement of time. You know, each day comes up, the sun sets, the sun, you know, and it's also it's not just the patterns of our being, this is the patterns also that. The repetitive pattern of the universe. Whereas jet time is the path to the first time, the path to the beginning, the path in a way to the place that is outside time, we could say, the place from which origination comes from. So it's got a direct line to the all possibility. Whereas nehe time is conditioned by the path, by the movements that are before it and to a certain extent after it.
Which is that, sorry? Could you say that last
bit? Yeah, nehe time is conditioned by the movements before it and in an odd way, in the movements that come after it.
So source of cause and effect?
Yes, cause and effect, as long as it's linear in both directions. Right, so the future causes the past causes the future. Mm-hmm. So when we're working with the movement of reversing time, literally going backwards, it's like you're pushing against the stream. So it's hard to do. There's a momentum about moving forward. So as you reverse that momentum, as Jessica said, you're digesting time, you're kind of absorbing time. And you're absorbing experience. And when you go forward again from that, you'll notice it's easier to go forward. It's much easier to move forward in memory than it is to move back in this way. Now, without jet time, without the place of timelessness, the patterns, the repetitions become exhausting and entrapping. In that little exercise we did, the only way out was to stop. Because as you go forward into the exercise, the exercise brings you back. And then the exercise brings you forward and then brings you back. And then brings you forward and brings you back. Now the nature of repetitive time, nehe time, is that it is constantly in motion, constantly cyclic. But unless it's paired with jet time, which is stop, it just continues. It continues in a loop. Now, another way to describe these two times, you can see in this image here, in this spiral and straight image. Okay, so you've got the spiral and the straight. So visually, this image depicts these two qualities of time. Now, the reason that Ernest is to teach us to do these salutes of the sun and then this evening review where you move backwards is to in that process learn to both to work with the forward momentum of the day. So as you work with the salutes of the sun, you're working with the movement of the universe. You're working with morning, working with noon, evening, nighttime. And then in the nighttime meditation, you're reversing the process. You're going back over the events of the day. You're kind of energetically working with the patterns of nehe, to clear the field, to enable the sense of connection to timelessness, to jet to the first time.
You start each day as if you're at the beginning.
At the beginning. And this is the same journey that you find in the Book of Gates, where Ra at the end of the day is old and tired. And undergoes this process that goes through the 12 hours of the night, so that Ra rises in the morning as a baby, made entirely new. So this is a sort of process, really, of working with these two dimensions of time. Working with verticality and working with cyclicity.
Fred, I find it quite hard, this visual, because I was very into Massey Elliott's idea of straight line is history, and circular time is the movement of the sun and the moon and the... So this is linear time, which does move us into past and present and future and purpose and going on and on and on.
Yeah.
Whereas this one takes us deeper into ourselves and we come out again. So it's a kind of, I don't know.
It's a very different image of time, because it's not a linear progressive image, right? Which is because actually the circularity of time which is about layers and movement, says that things just repeat themselves.
Gaia's, I mean.
Yeah, like Gaia's. Yeah, like layers. Yeah, totally. So it's that image of a linear time is something that would be very alien to an Egyptian. And they would say, actually, what they would likely say is it's much more going forward, back, forward, back, forward, back, and then there's this other thing that's there sitting in the middle of it, that is intersecting it. So the idea of the timelessness of time and the idea that all points of time are somewhere connected and somewhere multivalently influencing each other. So in this place, the future affects the past. The past affects the future, but also the future affects the past, because time, in this way of thinking of it, is a dimension. It's not a sort of a linear thing where you've got this moving point and whatever's gone is just gone and you meet what arises. Actually, it's saying this is a whole architecture. Time has its own architecture, its own dimension. And you start to discover this by working with this process of reversing time back and forth.
I suppose I don't get the image of the straight line, because that for me... I don't understand it. I can understand the spiral, but
the straight line is the timeless. Is the fact that all places are simultaneously connected to the all times are connected to the origination place. So there is a stopping in every moment of time. A timelessness in every moment of time. A changelessness in the midst of the change. In the midst of the changing flow. So there is both. In each moment, there is both change and movement and total stillness.
But it has to be in relationship to the spiral. It's not on its own. It has to be in relationship to the...
Well, they both are together, right? So they're not separate. Nehe and Jet are... So if their way of understanding time would be Nehe Jet, both together, yes? Not separate. They're not two things that come together. The two dimensions of time, two phenomenological dimensions of time that you can experience.
It's like photons and electrons.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. It's a bit like the sort of wave function, particle function, right? So so both are there, and then different bits show up depending on what's being looked at. Mm. In some ways.
Even the Gilchrist has got to say about waves and particles.
Yes.
Incidentally.
Hmm?
Ian McGilchrist has got...
He does.
Yeah.
He does.
Right would see the wave and left would see the particle.
Yeah, that's right. So this is completely, you know, sort of wired into us neurologically as well.
There's a TSA quote coming on here, isn't there? The point of intersection. Time with the timeless.
That's right.
They're the dances.
They're the dances. So actually, yes, there's four quartets that talks a lot about that.
It's funny, I get your point though, it's funny that it's represented by a line, because it could almost be a dot or...
Yeah, a dot could be... The Egyptian thing is just a pillar, the jet pillar, and they're looking at the stability of the pillar, right? So it's the fact that whatever is going on in the change, in the changing nature of things, there is this timeless stillness that is entirely stable. Right? And that is like... That's just how they imagined it, really, as a straight line, as a pillar. It's the pillar of Osiris, and it's one way of looking at it.
That's much better than a straight line.
Okay, good.
Could you give an example?
Mm-hmm.
Could you give an example?
Of what?
Of this. Of time.
Well, I did do that. That's the exercise is the example, Andy, right? That's the example, because you can't just because linear language can't describe that. But it is the experience both of movement and stopping. Right, so the exercise, so the experiential point of doing the exercise is to really try and engage trying to actually practically engage with this experience of time. Now, one of the things that you notice as you that it's hard to move time backwards. Right, so there is a momentum in that cyclicity. But one of the things that happens as you move time backwards is you can get a kind of sense of feeling a little freed up from the dynamic of time, which takes you a bit more into the sense of the timeless.
Yes.
Right, so that's when you're touching on the nature of jet time a bit. And then you have that interesting thing when you move forward again, you have in some ways a better sense of the movement of your own movement through time. Mm. And so we're looking at the consciousness, we're looking at you moving your consciousness through time, backwards and forwards, and then into the relationship with the timeless.
So this is the same as when Merlin was seen as getting...
As he gets older, yes, he's moving backwards through his life, right? So there's that sense in the story of Merlin where he's a great prophet because he's remembering what happens in the future. You know, and it doesn't make any sense, you know, but that literally is the phrase. He's remembering what's about to happen. Right? So that's that same kind of idea.
So there must be a great deal of sort of intention there. It can't just be like rumination or
no.
Repent on things.
No, you're working with a dimension, right? You're working with, so if you think of the experience of moving your attention backwards through time, it's quite hard. It takes a lot of, and you have to really slow it down and be with, and let, and it's almost like you're pushing against an existing momentum. And actually, if you do that, and as you do it, as you get used to doing it, you find actually it becomes easier because you start to work out how to operate in time as a dimension.
So if you wanted to work on something that's, say, like a bad memory,
yes,
literally trying to work back through that,
yeah,
as a reversal,
yes, yeah,
to a point prior to it,
yeah,
would fall within this idea.
Yeah, it would be quite powerful. It's by fact, it's something you can do as you get more experienced in that. You can kind of, you know, you examine something backwards and sort of, and you'd bring in a different quality of causality into it. And in a way, you kind of, it's that idea that Jessica's mentioning about digesting time or consuming time. Now, later on in the Book of Gates, you'll find there's figures who are working with ropes, or one place there's a rope coming out of a being's mouth. Now the rope, some of the aspects of ropes and serpents in the Book of Gates are about working with time, where the serpent image can be, it's like, you know, the Ouroboros image, such as with the serpent eating its own mouth. Well, so the serpent images are often used in relationship to understanding time. And in a certain sense, that Ouroboros image is kind of what we're working with. In fact, it's not just one simple circle, it's, you know, wound around. That's why it's a spiral kind of serpent. That's why, in a way, but what you're trying to do is to sort of, as you kind of understand the different layers, the different spirals, as you understand yourself as a being working with time, you become freer around memory, freer around the dimensions of time, so you're able to kind of work with it.
And presumably the more you go back and forth, it's almost like a windscreen wiper.
Totally. So you get clear, things get clearer, your things get digested, things get opened up, and your relationship to time starts to alter. You start to experience it as a, if you like, a dimension of your own awareness that you can kind of work with, rather than being simply if you're like a victim of time, the time just moves you on. This is something you can kind of start relating to and start working with.
I quite liked having the, you know, going back through time through the different centres.
Yeah.
Because those had different ways of relating to the memories, which were kind of outside the
you know, your thought process.
Yes, that's right.
So
yeah.
It had
yeah.
a different dialogue, it had a different language, and it had yeah. a different feeling. So
yeah.
that felt helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. That's partly why we used it in connection with the middle pillar. Because what you're doing then, as you go back over the middle pillar exercise, which is essentially most of what we did in that, is you're experiencing that from a different point of view.
You're remembering it, and
yeah.
then you're re-experiencing it almost.
That's right. Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. That's right, because you're looking at, yes, exactly, you're re-experiencing it backwards, right? So you're looking at it, so you're getting a completely different experience of it by doing that.
Getting space from it.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And therefore it's giving you a different kind of understanding of it. And it's that sense of space coming in that's part of that timeless kind of energy. Mm. So that in itself starts then to give you a different relationship to what you've been doing.
It's a relief in a way, because you've already lived it.
Yeah.
So it's not like meeting the now.
No.
It could be like we're coming up from Mark before we're going down. So
yeah.
So I know, this looks completely different from this area.
Yeah, that's right. So you look. Yes, and because you've created it already, right? So but now you're creating a different relationship to it by doing that.
Because sometimes time speeds up.
Yes.
Sometimes, but it's very, very slow.
Yes.
Clock starts ticking. It's a very different experience, and I'm wondering
yeah.
if that fits in.
Yeah, well, that's part of it, right? So those moments when time seems to stretch itself are moments where we're experiencing time as a dimension, rather than the common way of thinking about time. Right, so this is part of it. We're starting to really consciously engage with that part of ourselves that experiences time as an aspect of our own life and our own experience.
It seems to happen. It gets very slow. We're seeing clients happens when it's absolutely not known what's going to happen. Now.
Yes, that's right. Oh, that's right.
Just
yeah. And that's where often when I think that sense of the timeless nature of time starts to impact. So that moment of not knowing is often a transition moment. And that's when that timeless aspect of time comes together with time, with the repetitive nature of time. So that's where the effect of that is to everything slows and slows and slows. And time seems to stretch. Whereas when you're more in the, when that sense of timelessness is much less there, you're much more in the sort of this, the moving thing. And that's when time seems to go flashing by.
Like in Ukrainian, you get a still point.
Put the light on, it's getting a bit dark in here.
No, you can go. I couldn't bear to do, sit, go to bed and I'd fall asleep if I'd even started. I mean,
we don't have to do it in bed. You can do it any time of the day.
It's small.
Yeah,
bite-sized chunks.
Well, no, you would be doing it. That's just like we've done, right? No, so the whole point of when Ernest is to teach us to do it just before bed. The idea is you do it for a brief period of time and then you would fall asleep. Why do you know? And
it doesn't matter where you got to. In the time.
No. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're not trying to get anywhere with it. What you're trying to do? No, that's the problem. That might be. Well, you're not trying to. Okay, I've got to get there. Yeah. What you're trying to do is you're working with an aspect of your own being, right? You're working with the nature of time, and that's what you're trying to learn. What you're trying to learn from. You're not trying to. Oh God, I've got to get to waking up. Otherwise, bugger, there'll be a backlog the next day, and after then, do you? No. So don't do that, because otherwise you start trying to race yourself.
Last 40 years, have you not told me that bit?
Well, you never asked me about it, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah, well.
I'm trying to get back to lunch.
I never got that far. So, can we just one more bit?
Yeah.
The gap between here I am at the front door, whatever, and here I am shot back into my body and somewhere. I'm in two places.
You're in two places at once, right?
So there's something funny with time.
Yeah. Well, actually, what that reveals in that moment, because it's a very sharp moment, right? Because I've just done this very shocking thing, is that you can be inhabiting two spaces of time simultaneously, and often we do. So in a certain sense, you know, one of the things, Jenny, really, when I talked about Blackie, your relation to time in that moment, one of the pieces possibly is that you're entirely suddenly relating to being with Jesse. Okay, so you are literally then in two times at once. And we do that a lot, but we don't notice, right? So actually we are constantly, when in working with memory, we're stretching across different times, different experiences. And in that moment, where you get that very sharp moment, where you literally discover, you see, you discover yourself just outside that door, you discover yourself outside the door of the building, where you just got a very direct sense at that point, and you're aware, well, something of me is outside the room. And maybe it still is. Is it still outside the room?
No, I think it's back in.
No, right, so it's come back in there, right? But there's something about the simplicity, the straightforwardness of trusting that experience, rather than, so the literalness actually of, okay, part of me is here, part of me is out there. In your case, Jenny, part of me is in here, part of me is outside the building. Part of me is getting more and more angry with Ian, so I'm coming back in more. And you know, but it's the knowledge of both. Mm-hmm. That's important, and the simplicity of that. Rather than psychologizing it, actually, I'm a great fan of psychology, as you all know. But in that moment, there's a literal sense of I am here and I am there.
And that you're right.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And get interested. You just have to get interested in that, and nothing.
It feels horribly split.
Well, you're just in two places. I mean, so you can make it feel like you're split, and maybe you don't want to do that, and maybe you bring yourself back in, or you can get interested in, well, what's it like to be in two places? And what you might discover from that is kind of what I discover is quite often I'm in two places.
Yeah, so I could be here, but thinking about Blossom, and I'm
yes,
there.
Yes, and you're there. Mm. Both, that's right.
So I've had this conversation before, and people have kind of said, that's dissociation.
Nah. Mm.
Yeah.
So I'm curious.
No, because it's the opposite of dissociation. And in dissociation, you lose presence. Mm-hmm. Right, so in this instance, if I can use you, Pam, as an example, because you've given me a great example. Right, Pam is is aware she's present here and aware the part of her is outside the door.
Uh-huh.
Right, it's not dissociated because she's present of both.
Yeah, that's what I
right, and that's the big difference. Dissociation is that the whole point of dissociation is you lose presence. It's a defensive reaction to overwhelm, right?
Some people would argue it's more where are you in your body? See what I mean?
Yeah, I get
so
that.
Like,
but
are you in your body here? Because if you're at the door, you're kind of not.
Yeah, well, I'd argue with them about that I think that's because they don't understand subtle perception, really, because many years of being a psychotherapist, the key feature of dissociation is absence of presence. And the difference in these experiences, that both, you know, both in Pam's version and in Jenny's version, you know, we heard Jenny was absolutely clear, the part is outside the door. You knew you're outside the door.
Yeah.
You also know you're talking to me, and you get a bit annoyed, so you know you're in both places. Now, you're not dissociated in that, right? Because you've got awareness of both places. And that's the big difference, really.
Yeah.
And was that why it was so confusing? Because
yes.
Yes.
Yes. Right, because you were literally feeling both experiences simultaneously, yeah. Right? So you were right that part of you is outside the door, part of you is here, and then, oh God, where the hell am I?
Yes.
And, you know, and yeah, exactly. So that's exactly what ends. Whereas actually to know that you can be in both places and get curious about that and interested in what happens to you when you are in both places.
So can you send portions or one of yourself forwards in time as well? If I was sitting
yeah.
here and I wanted to go to tomorrow, for instance, it's
yeah,
that's to say, okay, off you go, Pam, that part of Pam, have a little explore.
Oh, yeah, and get interested in that, and get interested in what comes back at you from that.
Okay.
That's the same as far-seeing, or is that what they would describe as far-seeing?
I suppose it would be the same as, yes. I mean, it's a bit like getting, you know, sort of, you know, if we just do the exercise now, just look forward into tomorrow. Let's just say tomorrow. Reach into yourself tomorrow. Okay, and just bring yourselves back and out. Let's just see what happened when you tried to do that. Or didn't that.
I had to work a little bit to get through, not to resist or anything, but to actually just sort of get through the sort of hopes.
Mm.
And the known patterns of what I would be doing.
Tomorrow, yeah, sure, and absolutely.
And then I got a sense of my going on being, a kind of solidity, that I was there.
Yeah, great.
Which was rather...
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, good, that's right. What did other people experience?
Yeah, I had a bit of the rational brain going, tomorrow, Monday, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Then wake up, Lawson wakes up, Lawson wakes me up, okay, then we go in there, make a tea. I could see all that happening, but then what we would do and the games we would play just sort of came. So it was interesting, because it just came.
Yeah.
Quite easily.
Yeah, good, yeah.
Whether that's what will actually happen or
not. No, I don't know, but that's an aspect of the future, right? That's an aspect of the future.
What could happen?
It's a potential that's already actually impacting on the present, potentially.
And I allowed it to play.
Yeah.
It was like it was unfolding.
Yeah.
As opposed to me making it up.
Yeah, that's right. Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
It's something, some kind of thing of, we're making it up or what? Coming back is quite interesting.
Yeah.
Because then here feels a bit less tangible or less linear, I suppose. This feels like there's another dimension around something.
Yeah, that's right.
It's subtle.
That's right. Yeah, somewhere the sense of tomorrow becomes present now.
Yeah.
A little bit deja vu-ish.
Mm.
A similar feeling when you have a deja vu.
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
I couldn't discern whether I was just making plans for tomorrow. Mm. Or I was letting it unfold. And I guess I was planning. That would be my suspicion of myself. Yeah. Rather than letting it unfold. I guess that would be that something.
It does feel like it could easily just lean into something like mental rehearsal or...
Yeah, it could do, yeah.
And
yeah.
That, you know, finding the car parking space thing of, if I have it in my head, I find it would be, my feeling would be difficult not to start composing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's the danger of our idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that is a danger?
I think it can be a danger, right? So if you like the difficulty of going backwards in time is pushing against that. One of the problems of moving forward in time is that it's a lot of space. So the danger is you can take your kind of sense of what should happen and impose that on the space,
right?
Rather than feeling into the potential space. Feeling into the potential space gives you a sense of me tomorrow. And if you've got a kind of curiosity about that, then, as you were describing, things sort of naturally start emerging in that.
What wants to arise naturally.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, yeah, that's interesting, as opposed to I want that to happen.
I want that to happen, that's the difference, right? Yeah. So it's cooperating with flow as opposed to imposing yourself on flow.
Funny, I had a car a couple of weeks ago, and the guy who's giving me the keys said, just so you know, if you get a traffic speeding ticket, we'll charge your card for that. And as he said that, it was like a premonition. I'm telling you this.
Yes.
Because this is going to happen.
This is going to happen, yeah.
And inevitably it did happen. And I'm just sort of with something around. I wonder if it's a bit sort of like fate versus
that's right.
Free will. It's sort of like, could I have altered that?
Yeah.
Could I have done something to sort of or just accept, okay, so that's me getting...
Well, I think that's the interesting question then, isn't it? So if we start to think of time as something that we can work with, as opposed to are the victim of, then that sense you had, if you like, almost that time sense you had about this could happen, then if we think of that as time, something to work with, then it's possible you could have worked with that in some way or other by kind of, I don't know how, what you would have done, but actually that's the difference here somewhere of working the time as an aspect of our own being that we can kind of work with so that patterns may or may not emerge. And so that then that's one of the crucial things, really, of that idea of timeless time coming together with patterned time, is there is possibility in it. So in the same way that you can transform the past, maybe you can transform the future.
Mm. And I was left with a very bodily sense of something here, which was felt really calm and because it's like tomorrow I haven't got anything planned. I've got the day to do my reaccreditation accounts. I can do it all tomorrow. But I'm just wondering about that bodily sense of how good that felt to have that space.
Yeah.
Whether tomorrow I might remember that and somehow make better use of the space.
Yes, absolutely. That's possible, isn't it? Yeah. So that's one of the things to get interested in and curious about tomorrow.
I wanted to go into Monday, but I was hijacked by Tuesday.
Okay.
So I was in Tuesday, and I'm meeting somebody in a cafe, a friend in a cafe.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise how anxious I was about meeting this friend, because I saw her, and then I got into my own body, and I felt really anxious about all the things I've got to do around after I've met her. So not her specifically, but the whole day.
Yeah.
But so I thought, oh, okay, and then we came back again. But yeah, but I was hijacked by Tuesday when I thought I was going into Monday.
Yeah. So that's interesting, isn't it? So that's, again, that's an aspect of non-linearity. So although we're thinking of tomorrow, actually where you needed to be was in Tuesday.
Yeah.
So that was the demand, that was the piece that needed attention. Yeah. It's interesting.
I realise for me is something I'm quite frightened of the future. I don't perceive the future at all, really. I mean, a whole bit. But it naturally it's really uncomfortable. It's as though I'm walking backwards into my life.
Mm.
And so to plan is something about saving myself from that fear.
True, yeah.
And rather than I've been knowing it yesterday particularly, a bit today, it's about asking for whatever needs to come. So I get quite passive. It's an act of passivity, but it's an invitation for whatever needs to come.
Yeah.
Rather than that fear of questioning, you
know, what I'm meant to be doing, yeah, totally. That is interesting, yeah. Let's just stop for a cup of tea.